Hi, this is Warwick Davis, and you're listening to the Friday Filibuster.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to a jumbo edition of the Friday Filibuster. We've got a great panel of experts on hand to help kill some time before your weekend. And we'll start with one Mr. Eric Asherslager. Eric, welcome.
Thank you. I've never been called an expert outside of court before.
Well, I wasn't really referring to you, but that's okay.
Oh, okay.
Mac McIntyre.
Hello.
Mike Rubino, who's just kicked some kind of awful Michael Crichton-like illness.
That's right. So I am an expert.
Expert on projectile blank. So
yes.
And a face, or a voice, I guess, is more like it. A voice we haven't heard in a while, Mr. Chief Justice Michael Staley, who's getting up for some Comic-Con craziness.
Yeah, early tomorrow. I'm leaving here at about 6 o'clock.
Nice. All right. Well, we'll look forward to I'm sure we're going to get a wealth of content from that. Before I hit the old record button, I was telling these guys about an article I read about a young woman who loved Sex and the City. I was so inspired by the character of Samantha, she decided to have sex with like 1,000 guys. So, I mean, you know, I guess that's one way to really, you know, be inspired by a character. So, surprise ambush topic to open this up, gentlemen. What negative behavior would you be, you know, could you be compelled to do by watching a TV show or a movie or a character? So, go, Eric.
For some reason, 24 pops to mind, so let's just say, fraying lamp wires. Wherever
yes.
I go.
that would make you'd be a very annoying person, I would say. a wake of frayed lamp wires. Mac.
Let's see, from the famous scene from Predator, I'm going to shoot 1,000 trees.
Oh. Mike Staley.
We'll go with Prison Break. I'll inspire Lindsay Lohan.
Mike Rubino.
Vigilante justice with a box fan.
Okay. And I guess just like, you know, watching too much Arrested Development, I suppose. Overload on banana dipping, I guess. And I'll let you interpret what that means. Huh. Maybe that's a euphemism. Maybe it isn't. Maybe I was referring to Tobias. Maybe I wasn't. Who knows? Okay. Well, anyway, here we are. This is our Friday Filibuster crew. And like I said, we're going to decimate your Friday. So you're prepped for your weekend. We'll see if we can kill off a few brain cells while we're at it as well. So, Eric, we'll start with you. We'll go, I'm going alphabetical order here, I suppose. So I think that applies to you for both first and last name, does it not?
But no, it maybe. Does, except for you.
Yes.
The D.
Yes. All right. All right. Well, anyway, Eric, what have you been up to?
Well, Dave, you know how I like to bring the timely movie
yes.
reviews.
Absolutely.
Topics. It's on everyone's lips, you know.
Okay. Okay, another surprise ambush topic. What timely movie review is Eric going to give us? Mac.
Gone with the Wind.
Okay, Mike Staley.
Citizen Kane.
Mike Rubino.
Tron, the first one.
I'll go with Triumph of the Will. That'll be mine. All right.
Well, compared to all of those answers, what I watched actually is pretty recent then. This is all part of the... So this is Blu-ray portion of my life. Again, going back to the well of the world's greatest library, Dave, of course.
Okay.
Picked up Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince, which is the only Harry Potter movie that I had not seen up to this point, and heard it was much better on Blu-ray, so I've got a chance to watch it. And I kind of realized that I keep coming back to these movies for some reason, but I don't really like them all that much.
You've got V syndrome, is what we call this.
V syndrome.
Oh, yes, that's right. Yeah. Yes.
That Stockholm
yes, it is.
Thing where you're
it is like
Stock.
Yes, it's very much like a Stockholm syndrome.
Yeah. I think, I mean, the styling is great. I mean, as far as bringing the setting of the books to life, I think the movies do a great job, but they just try to cram so much in, and maybe it's an impossible series to film in any kind of timely fashion, but I just kept the feeling that no one was reacting to anything anyone else was saying. They were just saying the next line. So it felt like I watched a 2.5-hour trailer for a much longer movie.
You know, and it's interesting, Eric, because, I mean, I love Harry Potter as much as the next guy. But, you know, when you say it's a hard – I mean, they pulled off Lord of the Rings, and that's a little more nuanced. You know, that's a little more – I think we can be hard on the filmmakers. That's what I'm saying. I'm giving you the green light to be hard on the filmmakers.
All right, that's fair. I think that you could certainly do a better job than they did. I think that they tend to focus on certain things that don't need to be focused on, or they don't make wise choices. I think they sort of assume that fans will get mad if they leave anything out. I know that in like the fourth movie, which I didn't like very much, they even added things that weren't in the book that didn't make any sense. It didn't seem to add anything to the stories. But in this sixth one, I mean, I guess you could say, you know, the whole romance angle was kind of unnecessary. And maybe I'm just a bitter old man and I didn't, you know, care about watching teenagers make googly eyes at each other. But as far as like the core stuff of what was happening, I didn't think that really made much of a difference. You know, it's funny you bring up Lord of the Rings because I felt a little bit the same way with the original theatrical version of Fellowship of the Ring. Not that, you know, they did a bad job with the movie, but it was so, you know, compared to the book, which was, you know, very much a sense of, you know, you're going on this journey. The first movie in the theatrical cut felt like it was just big scene, big scene, big scene, big scene. It didn't have any, like, the slower kind of pacing, just kind of traveling moments, which they added back in the extended edition, which is why I like that so much more. But it was tough with these, you know, book-to-movie adaptations because I think the only way to really do it well is to kind of treat the book as not sacred and just kind of slice and dice at will and just make a compelling movie. And you can't do that with Harry Potter fans, unfortunately.
All's fair, though, because the one thing that really frustrates me about J.K. Rowling's writing is how she so often goes off on tangents that have nothing to do with the main plot. You know, all the crazy stuff about Ron's two brothers, for example, and all their practical jokes. Every time those characters show up, I just wanted to throw the book against the wall, and I wanted to get back to Harry and stuff. So
they got you really? The practical joke.
I would disagree. I think that those are all very kind of interesting details. And within the scope of having, you know, a several hundred-page book to work with, I think she does a good job of kind of making you feel like you're going through a year of these characters' lives or school year. But, you know, I guess, you know, to each his or her own. I guess his in this case, but, you know, her to be a conclusive. anyway, Michael, what
were you saying? I haven't seen any of Max Bloodwork, so I can't completely. Yeah, Mike, go ahead.
Well, they made an interesting choice with this franchise in that they had Steve Kloves write the entire series, all except one, and that was because of another commitment he had to another project. So he did not write number 5, Order of the Phoenix. But he worked with J.K. and had her blessing on everything that they put together. But Eric, you're right. There's a lot of stuff that did get left out. I mean, in fact, two of Ron's brothers were completely excised from the movie franchise. And for the next two movies, you talk about Fellowship of the Ring being a journey piece. Well, the whole seventh book of Harry Potter is all a huge long journey with a lot of wandering, and it'll be interesting to see how they play that out.
Yeah. I mean, I guess at least they have given themselves two films to do it. And I'm worried that even though they'll have theoretically twice as long to tell the story, they'll still make it just as jam-packed and, you know, not give it any breathing room. You know, it's interesting you say that I didn't realize the fifth movie was not written by Steve Kloves, because I actually, you know, I think it's an unpopular opinion, but I thought that was one of the more successful movies, just storytelling-wise. Mm-hmm. I thought that they did a good job. They had the whole technique where they did the newspapers overlapping that kind of filled in a lot of details. Sure. I think it was a nice way of giving you quick snapshot information in a way that made sense and didn't feel rushed, but also kind of opened the story up and let them, you know, slow down a little bit in kind of the more actual, the scenes themselves.
And I wonder how much of that was David Yates, the director, too. And that's mm-hmm. the difference between the Lord of the Rings franchise and the Harry Potter franchise, is that Peter Jackson had the entire thing under control from the very beginning. Whereas with Harry Potter, you have the same producers, but you're bringing in different directors, you know, and the fan favorite seemed to be the third one, Azkaban, with Alfonso Cuarón. But the last three pictures, being with the same director, they're hoping for, you know, some type of homogeneity that's going to amp it up into a big frenzy towards the end.
Yeah, and that makes sense. I mean, I think it's one thing that struck me as well watching the sixth movie is for all the acting talent that they've assembled for these movies, the acting's not really that great. I mean, the actual kids who've grown up and done this, they've gotten some kind of accolades and, you know, critical acclaim for some of their maybe the later movies, but I do not buy them at all. And even the really great, you know, actors like, you know, I'm drawing total blanks now.
Michael Gambone and Alan Rickman.
Michael Gambone, Alan Rickman. Right. Yeah, Alan Rickman tends to be awesome regardless. But, yeah. You know, they're just – I think it's just because that they're so rushed and they have to just line after line after line. There's really no emotion. It tends to be a lot of flat deliveries. And so that was disappointing. I mean, well, the Blu-ray looked nice and, you know, the styling, again, impressive, but just – you know, without a good story and without a good storytelling, it kind of leaves me flat. So,
well, that was a lot of time spent on that movie, Eric. You guys, like, That's 10 minutes of this podcast devoted to a movie that came out last year. So,
well, sorry. I'm sure you're going to spend 20 minutes talking about a movie that came out this week that I haven't watched yet.
That's
so
true.
I'm gonna have to step away. Yes. But I'll have time to make a sandwich, I'm sure.
Good point. Well played. All right. Very good. Well, I think this might be a recurring Friday filibuster segment. Like, you know, old news with Eric Astroslager.
That's how I figure. I figure Mike Rubino got his 80-cent movie reviews in. And
that's true.
I mean, to be fair, Dave, 2 or 3 weeks ago, you guys spent like 20 minutes talking about Gymkhana.
We did. So,
that was an award-winning podcast episode.
That was like a special event, though. I mean, you know, this is...
Absolutely. I'm not... Look, my only point was that Gymkhana is far older than anything I've watched so far. Just you wait and see what happens next week, Dave.
That's true. I can't wait. Nice tease, by the way. So, but yeah, we got to devote that time. When someone watches Gymkhana for the first time, you know, we give him like 20 minutes of the filibuster, and B, an angel gets his wings. So, all right, Mac McIntyre, what have you been up to?
Okay, well, are we going to discuss that movie now, or are we going to wait till the end of the show?
Yeah, that movie being Christopher Nolan's Inception. Mm-hmm. We will. Three out of the five of us have seen it, so we're going to stick that one in the rear spoiler, which will follow the podcast proper. So if you haven't seen it and you don't want to be subjected to our probing. And then again, who wants to be subjected to our program?
Even if I had seen the movie, I probably would be.
But that's when we will go in depth. So aside from that, go ahead, Max.
Aside from that, let's see. Really enjoying the new episodes of Futurama. You know, it's been a couple years since they've cranked out new episodes. They're on a new network now, but they've really been bringing it, and they've really been doing some creative, clever stuff. The last episode started out as a spoof of the Da Vinci Code, and then it went off on a weird whole other tangent, and it was really, really funny, really clever, and just beautifully animated. So Futurama is back, and it's really as good as it's always been.
I mean, is all the talent back, like the voice talent?
I believe so, yeah. It's at least all the main characters are back, certainly. You know, it looks like they haven't missed a beat. Yeah.
I've been enjoying them, although I feel like some episodes are like really good, like feel like old-timey episodes, and then other ones I think feel like they're trying too hard to get jokes in there and things, and there's not that like emotional attachment that you would have with older episodes. But
great, you just described the Friday filibuster like perfectly. Well done, Mike. try too hard and no emotional attachment.
Exactly. But you know what? I went back. Seeing the new episodes made me want to go back and start watching the old stuff, so I popped in the first season. And the first season, while it has its like some pretty classic episodes, there are some pretty unwatchable episodes, especially like the pilot and like the first few episodes are pretty rough. So it made me sort of value these new episodes, even the ones that I didn't necessarily care for.
I see where you're coming from. I'm kind of the school that believes that, you know, there are some episodes that are standouts more than others. But with that said, I still think, you know, the weaker episodes of Futurama are better than a lot of the other stuff on TV.
Oh, I definitely agree with you there. And I was just so happy that this wasn't like another Family Guy comeback, which when Family Guy came back, I disliked it instantly. So very happy to see that Futurama is handling it a little bit better.
Yeah, because they said for years they couldn't bring the show back unless they could maintain the quality, and I think they have.
Yeah, definitely.
See, I've been hearing – I thought I heard that they brought in a bunch of new writers, some of whom were kind of from Family Guy, and I heard it – to one, I haven't seen any episodes, so this is all secondhand, but the guy I've spoken to made it sound like the new Futurama was more Family Guy'd up, and he did not like that. Is that not accurate?
Personally, I would say that the episodes that I don't like are closer to Family Guy because they're extremely jokey and the plots move really, really fast. And like, there's only been like a handful of episodes. So I think I'm thinking specifically of like the one where Bender and that girl get married or try and get married.
Right. Amy. Yeah.
Amy. Yeah. So like that episode to me felt like it was moving way too fast and it was just joke after joke after and felt like a Family Guy episode. So but the ones I gravitate towards more are just the ones that are sort of natural storytelling. I don't know, Mac, what do you think?
OK, I'm not quite sure. I see the Family Guy comparison. Family Guy is not a show I watch consistently, just I'll catch it when it's on, but other than that, I really don't care. But I've always felt Family Guy goes way overboard on, like, you know, the cutaways and the sort of random gags. And I'm not quite sure I'm seeing that on Futurama.
Well, I'm gonna curtail this because, A, I hate Family Guy. I don't even want to talk about it. So, and it's a bit spoiling Futurama just by associating it, even by like 6 degrees of future Family Guy. So, I'm gonna.
I thought is it incorrect that there are Family Guy writers working on the new Futurama, or that I heard that? I don't know. I'm just, that's why I brought it up.
It's conspiracy theory. I don't know.
It's not. I don't think it's conspiracy theory. I think it's easily verifiable. Although none of us will do it. So.
None of us will.
Yeah.
We're not going to.
I'm in denial.
So feel free to write in if you're listening and you want to do research for us.
We all want to keep our eyes closed, like in Raiders of the Lost Ark. There, you know, we're afraid of what we see. So let's just shut our eyes and move on to Mike Staley, who I haven't heard from in a long time. So I'm assuming he's got so many adventures to regale us with.
Yeah, well, a lot of them have to do with the redesign, too. So,
give us an update on the sexy.
We're moving closer and closer. I mean, and I know I haven't talked to you guys about this in a while, but design company out of Chicago, we've been doing a lot of work with them. You guys saw some of the preliminary designs of what we're looking at. And the back end is being built as we speak, and they're actually looking for a soft beta test launch in mid-September.
Okay, so soft beta test launch in the back end.
The whole thing.
Oh, okay.
The whole thing will be soft launch in September.
Gotcha. All right. Wow. So, this is happening.
Yeah, this is really happening.
This is like Back to the Future 3. We just passed the windmill in this super locomotive. Man, I can't. All right. Very cool. How about, again, you got some Comic-Con in front of you. You want to just talk a little bit about that, which you're looking forward to?
Yeah. As you're hearing this, I'll already be back, but. I'm just going down for Thursday this year because that's the only thing my schedule will allow me to do. And they've actually front-loaded a lot into the schedule. So one of the big things I'm going to cover is the Red press conference with Bruce Willis and Helen Mirren. We'll be there, and Warren Ellis, the writer who co-created the original graphic novel that it's based on. The big thing that's kicking off tomorrow, Tron Legacy, with a big press conference, and...
Was Tron Legacy filmed with 3D in mind, or is it like another corny afterthought? You know,
that's a good question.
That'll be interesting to find out. Maybe they'll touch on that. I'd be interested to hear that. So,
although you were talking about Christopher Nolan, and the rumor around town is that they're going to do Batman 3 all in IMAX.
Wow, really? He's always loved the IMAX, not so much for the 3D, but he's been all about the IMAX. So
yeah, well, I think it's a logistics problems right now because the I guess the IMAX film, you can only go 165 minutes.
Okay.
And the cameras are apparently very loud and very heavy, so they're trying to...
So he'll have to stay within a reasonable runtime, is what you're saying?
Exactly, right.
What? Unheard of.
So now I read that as well, so if... If the movie's filmed in IMAX, does that mean it can only be shown in IMAX? No, or can it just be shown on regular screens as well?
I guess it's ported, because we cover a lot of the IMAX films that come to DVD and Blu-ray.
Yeah, it's true.
So they just, it's kind of dumb it down to, the aspect ratio's different.
In fact, doesn't the Blu-ray for Dark Knight have the IMAX scenes in there?
Yeah, the aspect ratio jumps. So it goes from like 235 to 185, 178 or so. So it jumps. To answer your question, Eric, it must, because when I watched Dark Knight in the regular old theater, those IMAX scenes are still in there, So I would think.
So the benefit is that you get a better product at the larger size.
I think so. Yeah. If you go in IMAX, it'll be just 165 minutes of eyeballs nuking glory, I suppose.
And if you go to the regular theater, it's like watching a Blu-ray on a standard definition TV set.
That's right. And the ticket takers swear at you and point and laugh. They release those red ants from MacGyver into the theater just because you suck so much.
Have you been to the theater?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
The theater?
Those cheap seats are not worth it, my friend. Trust me.
I don't know. They're cheap.
They are cheap. Ant biting versus cheap. I don't know. We'll see.
Well, maybe not for 165 minutes. But
all right. Very good. Well, it'll be interesting to see what you come back with, Mike. Very good.
Yeah, well, the other big thing tomorrow, too, and I'm not going to be around there for it, is the Expendables press conference.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That'll be a very special fight of filibuster, gentlemen, will it not be?
if we can all talk afterwards.
Yeah.
It's very possible my brain will have melted by the halfway point of that movie.
That's true. Be able to talk. And the rule, like, you'll have to be eating a porterhouse while doing the podcast as well.
And we'll have a stop for a push-up break.
Yes, push-up break.
20 push-ups.
All right. Well, Mike, go ahead. What do you got?
Well, that's good. That segues. I was going to talk about Interception, but I'm going to instead.
Interception, huh?
Interception, yeah. But,
the Brett Favre story, right?
That's that movie with Martin Short and Dennis Quaid, right?
Yeah. That's right. It's directed by Nolan Ryan. So instead, this segues nicely into the Expendables. There's a video game online. I don't know if anybody else has played this, but the Expendables have made an 8-bit Contra-style like Nintendo game that the movie company made and put online. Originally, it was only on Facebook, and then they put it on another site as well. And it is pretty awesome. I'm terrible at it because I'm really bad at Contra, but you can choose between Stallone, Jet Li, or Jason Statham. And, you know, they each have their pros and cons, you know, Sly being really strong, but he's really slow.
Yep.
And Jet Li being really fast and he can jump high, but he's weak. And Jason's kind of in the middle. But yeah, I guess it's got a couple levels on it. And, you know, it's pretty hardcore gaming. The only, you know, but you have to use a keyboard, which kind of makes it difficult. But the buzz on Expendables seems to be ramping up considerably.
Now, is this movie firmly in your most anticipated now from this point forward?
It's been my most anticipated movie for over a year.
Okay, all right.
Maybe even longer. As soon as Rambo was done, Stallone did some interviews saying that he wanted to do this movie that got a bunch of dudes together. I have been anticipating it since then.
That's the only synopsis you needed to get excited about.
Yeah, it's just I'm getting a bunch of dudes together and we're gonna shoot things. I just was sold. I was ready. Interception. Is going to occupy my mind for the next couple weeks here, but then it's all Expendables all the time.
Okay. Let's see. On my end, a little bit of TV watching. I've been watching the new FX series Louie, which I've actually enjoyed. It's pretty good. It's definitely different. It's funny, but there's some weird, like, there's some dramatic elements tossed in. I think Louis C.K. is a pretty funny comedian, so... And he really pushes that FX MA rating.
Yeah, I caught a couple episodes and was surprised at what they were getting away with on cable.
I'm guessing you caught the conversation they had around the poker table. Did you catch that one?
Yeah.
That was HBO-ish, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, the show already, like, inherently feels very similar to Curb Your Enthusiasm and the way it's filmed and everything.
Yeah.
Mixed with really long stand-up bits. Yeah, I'm enjoying it.
Yeah.
But it's weird to see something that sort of shocks you anymore on cable.
Yeah,
and the show definitely does.
And I think it only shocks me because it is on cable. Although The Shield was doing a lot of pretty wild stuff with that. I mean, I was surprised what The Shield was doing, too. So,
well, and Rescue Me. Rescue Me had its fair share of shock value. Oh, yeah, early on.
And Nip Tuck, of course. I mean, not that I watch it, gentlemen, but that's what the rule is.
Sure.
So I've been enjoying Louie. But on the other end of the spectrum, I need to give you a little update on, I know what you've been wondering, what is happening in season 2 of Make It or Break It. Well, I am glad you asked. See, when the girls go to Paris to compete in a world championship, Emily decides to take a risk and go see her rock star boyfriend, who is performing only a few miles away, but she breaks curfew and is set up. She's actually set up by Lauren, the vindictive teammate, and she gets kicked off the squad to compete. And then she has a tearful breakup with her boyfriend. So, you know, that was a tearjerker, guys. I'm not going to lie to you. You know, meanwhile, back at the Rock in Alcatraz, but in Colorado, the gymnasium is called the Rock. Sasha, who is the coach, feels like he's being undermined by the girls and not listened to, especially when Payson, who just got back from a devastating back injury and is trying to compete again, fails to heed his advice and pays dearly for it. What's going to happen in the future? I'll let you know next week. That is it.
This this podcast brought to sanitary napkins.
Well, some kind of napkin. Some kind.
Did you have that written down? Was that?
Oh no, no, that was just my heart. My heart's speaking.
I see.
He's got Bridget over there. She's propped up with cue cards, and he's reading off.
That's right. No, she's on the Fisher Price balance beam right now.
Yeah, when I was sick, I watched a lot of Full House when I was home from work.
That is a good illness viewing.
It is. It's like they're hugging you the whole time.
It is like they're hugging you. Yeah.
And whatever channel that show's on, just kept running Make It or Break It commercials in between every episode.
That'd be ABC Family. So I probably have a disturbing gymnast theme in my life that I haven't really come to terms with, but hey. Okay. Let's talk about what we've been working with the site. So, Eric, what do you got coming up?
So, this week I'm reviewing the first season of White Collar, also on Blu-ray. I'm jumping in with both feet, Dave. With both eyeballs.
Great, great. Fantastic.
Anyway, this is a show that I've talked about many times, so I won't talk about it too much here. Great show. First season was a lot of fun. It's definitely one of the most kind of stylish USA shows. Good character dynamics. Good mystery, kind of heisty type stuff, and good character interaction. And it looks good. It's great on Blu-ray. And the second season has started up, and so far so good. So
very nice, Mac.
Yeah, as the review was posted earlier this week, a really kind of fun, quirky documentary called Pez Heads, which is about the secret life of Pez collectors. People collect the little Pez dispensers. The inside of their homes are just, wall-to-wall Pez dispensers. They've got hundreds of thousands of different varieties and variations of each one, and they're just these mammoth displays, cost more than a house to collect them all. They've got their own little subculture and their own little society all devoted to their love of Pez.
I have no way to respond to what you just
said. You sound disgusted by it, Mac. By their love of Pez.
No, it's all good because, as you've heard me talk about in other podcasts, I have been known to collect weird things myself, so I can kind of get it, but
come on, Mac. Dead woodland creatures are totally different, okay? All right, well, if you can relate, that's good. So do you think it reaches out to kind of the quirky collector,
That's true. One caveat about the movie, though, the main guy that we follow throughout all of this, he's also one of the movie's producers. So all this talk about, Pez is so great, we love Pez, you kind of have to take that with a little bit of, dare I say, grain of salt.
I guess.
And or grain of, I don't know, Pez.
Shard of Pez, probably.
He's like the Michael Moore of Pez documentaries.
It's on his business card, I think.
Yes. All right. Well, thanks for the heads up, and thanks for the warning. I mean, you did your due diligence as a critic.
Right. But even knowing that, though, it's still a fun movie.
Very good. Mike, have you had any time to watch anything interesting?
No, I've actually been catching up with Glee. I saw the second half of Glee as it was broadcast, and I'm going back to catch the first half on DVD, and actually the entire series is coming out soon. So
are you a, dare I say it, gleek?
I wouldn't say I'm a gleek. I'm not hardcore, but I am.
You're a glock. That's a joke.
A glock.
That's where the urban gleek land.
And I also had the opportunity to go to the writer's panel with Ryan Murphy and his two co-creators, Ian Brennan and Brad Falchuk, not too long ago, last week, actually, and got some interesting information for season two, which we've got up for an upcoming podcast, so that should be interesting.
Very good. Okay, Mike Rubino.
I'm reviewing a rare Robert Altman movie that has not been on DVD yet until now through the Warner Archives called Brewster McCloud. He made it right after MASH. And I know it's like a cult film and a lot of people like it, but I did not care for it. It's sort of one of those weird, like, anarchic 70s comedies where there's all sorts of zany stuff going on and lots of chases and, goofy things like that. Very similar to like What's New Pussycat or King of Hearts or any of those movies, which I like both of those movies. But this one is weird. It's about a kid who's living in the basement of the Houston Astrodome, and he's building wings so that he can fly. And he's got this like guardian angel woman watching over him. And anytime somebody frightens or like threatens him, the guardian angel woman sicks a crow on that person and it poops on them and they die. And so there's sorts of like outrageous caricatures, and the whole movie's narrated by this like college professor who slowly turns into a bird throughout the movie. The movie's got this big bird theme going through it. And, it's completely bizarre and not very funny. It's very dated. It's, you know, it was made in 1970, so it sort of has this like leftover late 60s movie feel to it. The only redeeming quality, though, about this movie really is there's like this side story about this hotshot detective who's trying to track down the murderer who's killing all these people with bird poop. And he himself is like a parody of Steve McQueen from Bullet. So there's like this whole side parody of like 70s cop movies running through this thing that is really funny, but the bird stuff and the kid trying to build wings, and it's a weird movie. But
so is Altman's drug face?
It must have been. Like, I mean, I guess it was after MASH and he could do whatever he wanted, so he wanted to make this like counterculture anarchy type of comedy. Yeah. And it's bizarre. It's, you know, it's very Robert Altman-esque. And everyone's talking over each other, and there's a big ensemble cast and things like that. But it's not that funny.
Once again, Mike Rubino has described this podcast.
Yes,
a lot of people talking over each other. And it's not that
funny. A lot of crow poop, right? So much crow poop.
Kind of our calling card. I didn't know where it came from, Dave, but that, from Robert Altman.
All right, back to me then. I guess a couple Blu-rays I'll bring quick attention to. Battlestar Galactica season 3. And we've talked about, you know, Battlestar for a decent amount for sure, but it's interesting to go back to season 3 and kind of look at, because, I mean, this was like a real pivotal season. This is where they started moving away from Human-Cylon War and, you know, the straight arrow kind of being chased and the military stuff, you know, and into the more mythological, is that a good word for it? I don't know, mythical, supernatural almost, right? Metaphysical stuff that they...
Yeah, definitely.
So, I mean, I think the Eye of Jupiter is when they find that temple near the supernova. That's when it really takes a turn. And I would argue not exactly for the best, even though I still do enjoy the show a great deal. I began to feel a disconnect with just the layers upon layers of, you know, mysticism and mythology that they put on there. And, you know, there are, you know, some, there are questions that pop up in season 3 that, as far as I know, do not get answered in season 4. Like, you know, they were talking about the final 5 Cylons. And then they were talking about, like, there's, like, a bigger, like a head honcho who... I know Voldemort's the one who must not be. You know, that's not who it is. But it sounded like they were talking about... There was talking about, like, it seemed like they were referencing another big person. So that never seemed to come to pass. And none of the math really worked out. And they're talking about all the thousands of years of the last tribes and blah, blah, blah. So that got a little convoluted. It's kind of a schizophrenic season for me because it has like some of the very best Galactica stuff. Like the trial of Baltar is one of my favorite two-parters, even though it's like a courtroom drama, but it's fantastic. And there's a speech that Lee gives. I don't know if you guys remember this. It is like probably the best stream of dialogue written in that whole show, and it perfectly sums up a lot of that. So that, and then it's got some of the best action when they're escaping from New Caprica. That's just badass action, so awesome, feature film worthy for sure. But then it's just got like really awful stuff, like the one episode, you guys remember, where they found the virus that could wipe out the Cylons? You remember that one?
Oh yeah, that was kind of an unfortunate subplot.
Yeah, it was just really dumb. I mean, it's, I don't know, I mean obviously you're not going to do that. There's 30,000 of you left, you know, and these killer robots are after you. So I mean, they really tried to get into it and make this argument, but I don't know, it didn't work. So anyway, it was just interesting to see it in context with season 4 coming out. And then last, another movie called To Save a Life, which is a Christian movie. I'm usually hard on Christian movies. No one here ever see Fireproof?
Is that the Kirk Cameron stuff?
The Kirk Cameron one. You know, pretty big hit in the Christian circles. I'd reviewed it actually for the site. Wasn't very impressed. So, and I'm all for them, you know, for Christian filmmakers carving out a respectable reputation. So this one is legit. It seems pretty, it was good. Really tackled, like, in my review, I put like a decade's worth of after school special material, you know. But it was actually well made and compelling, which is definitely a step in the right direction. Though the lead kid also appeared in a movie I reviewed called Frat Party, which was one of the more debauched movies I've ever seen.
Oh, no.
that was kind of
your job.
That was sadly ironic.
The part that plays when you're in.
Part that plays, apparently, yeah. So, Mac, why don't you take us to the next phase here?
Okay. It wasn't Gleek the little space monkey from Super Friends?
Yes.
That's what I thought.
All right.
Yeah, well, whatever. Anyway, we're going to go and take a look at what's coming out next week on DVD and Blu-ray. We're going to go to DVDverdict.com, click on the upcoming DVD releases tab, and we're going to go to the cover art gallery for July 27th. And we're going to take
a
look.
You'll see some different things happening on the upcoming DVD releases
page.
Yeah,
I noticed that.
Look at
that.
And the step towards our redesign, which will be much more verbose in terms of technical spec information and bonus feature information when you kind of hover over.
Wow.
Link. Cool. So we're getting closer to that. This is the next step.
So how long before we're all replaced by robots?
I don't know. I'm thinking maybe another generation of redesign.
Oh, my.
Yeah. I'm a robot right now.
That's true. So Bridget still has a shot to write for the site. That's what you're talking about.
That's right. She does.
Firstly, I'm going to point out combat aircraft. You guys see this? Brought back bad memories of X-planes, which I've gone into detail.
Yeah.
But I love the little bottom corner, they describe the combat aircraft. We have stealth, carrier, tornado, and then fast jets. So I don't know if like Lockheed Martin or Boeing just ran out of ideas to name their kick-ass jets. You know, I mean. Raptor, we ran out of things, so we'll just call it fast jet.
Is there such a thing as a slow jet?
The word jet kind of it would imply that it's fast. You're right.
Depends on whether it's flying, you know, next to other jets or whether it's, you know, next to like a car.
Yeah, what,
a person walking
or parked? I guess if it's parked, I guess you could.
That's true. If it's a parked jet,
so maybe you should call it a combat aircraft that's not parked. What else?
I'm kind of curious as to this thing that's next to it, Crack in the World. They're trying to sell this as like the ultimate disaster movie with the whole Earth being split in two.
Thank goodness it's only a motion picture. Wow, look at that.
Thank goodness.
Thank
1965.
So you can't fault them for thinking small, that's for sure.
I thought it was a John Singleton movie at first, but apparently it isn't. What else?
Well, also coming out finally is the G.I. Joe movie, which I'm pretty excited about. I'm a big fan of that
movie. The animated movie, correct?
Yeah. Yes. Oh, yes. Thank you. Yeah, the animated movie, which is the first time that this is going to be seen on widescreen and full screen, both versions. Apparently, it was made on widescreen, which I never knew about. And when the Care Bears movie and the Transformers movie that were released in theaters didn't do as hot, they just axed the widescreen version and just released it on TV. Hmm. So Shout Factory put the widescreen version on DVD.
Wasn't part of the whole thing that Duke originally died in the movie?
Oh, spoiler!
I mean, no. Sorry, what I'm saying is they were going to do that, and then they like rewrote it so that he doesn't.
I don't know about that. I mean, I don't remember. If he was supposed to, I know he doesn't he get stabbed with a snake or something.
Something like that. And I think that they were. Yeah, I think I remember hearing, and I don't know for certain. You could read Steve Powers' review if you want to know. I guess probably for certain.
Right.
But yeah, that happened, and originally he was going to die, and it was this big emotional thing, and they just changed it, like, you know, did an ADR and make him say, "Duke's in a coma." Instead of Duke's dead.
If you're going to kill Optimus Prime in the Transformers movie and killing Duke in the G.I. Joe movie, I mean...
Yeah, Optimus, that's pretty hard to top. Yeah.
All right. Well, you know, I know it's like the most popular sport in the world, but just above it, the 15-disc FIFA World Cup set, judging from the footage I saw in this World Cup, Mr. Saley, if you ever, like, assigned that to me, I will quit, I think. I'm sorry. It's just a kid. I couldn't take it.
So. 15 to 20.
No, you're
going to
hate me enough for what's coming your way this week.
Oh, really? Fantastic. I mean, yes. Dave. Is it Fart the movie? It's Fart the movie.
No. Dave lost
is it high school
Blu-ray.
Math?
No, he lost the Blu-ray Russian Roulette this week, and we'll be reviewing Heroes Season 4.
Oh, Oh man!
I can't even make the FIFA World Cup joke I was going to make.
thanks.
Turn for the worse.
Great, fantastic.
I'll make it up to you later.
Okay. let's see. Clash of the Titans is kind of the big release, I guess, right? One of the bigger releases of the.
I mean, big compared to Hunter, the complete series.
Yes, and Clay Aiken, tried and true. So
live.
Some people, that's
true. That's a good point.
True. Let's not be snobs, Dave.
We won't be snobs. I'm sorry. Did any guys see Clash of the Titans?
I did see it, yes.
And how was it?
I was really disappointed.
Yeah, I'm sure you said that already, but I couldn't remember. So, all right.
It's okay, Dave. Sometimes we talk about movies that came out a while ago.
Yeah, you're right.
That's okay. I mean, I think that's a legitimate service.
Okay.
Provided to people like me who haven't seen that. I'm sure I represent, you know, a portion of our demographic, right?
I'm sure. Do they get Wi-Fi in nursing homes? I'm not sure.
Nursing homes. You're old and dying.
What else do we have?
We talked about it last week, but the new animated directed video, Batman Under the Red Hood, is coming out, which is a pretty cool movie. Lots of Batman action. And if you watched The Dark Knight and was wondering, where's Robin? Well, here you get some Robin action in this one, too.
Great. I'm sure people are going to be loving that. The Robin action.
Well, and I'll tell you, if you've never seen a Bollywood movie,
and
you have any interest in seeing what all the fuss is about, the movie Kites is coming out on DVD and Blu-ray. And I'm hoping we get this into review because you guys were talking about awesome truck chases on Objection.
Yeah.
This has an awesome truck chase in it.
Really?
No CGI. Oh, it's all practical. This was a Bollywood crew that shot a movie in Las Vegas in very much a – it changes genres like you would not believe.
I might have to put this on the Netflix queue then. I don't know.
It's really interesting. It goes from like kind of traditional Bollywood to – song and dance to like dance competition to Dukes of Hazzard.
Wow, that sounds like the greatest thing ever. Okay,
but don't all the Bollywood movies mix and match genres like that?
I don't know. This is the first one I've ever seen.
Oh, really? It's like kitchen sink filmmaking.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's kind of stereotypical Bollywood to have truck chases. That's kind of a standard thing.
I don't know about
a lot of dancing and a lot of truck chases. That's kind of. I mean, I don't want to expose your ignorance, Mike, but that's a big thing. Filmmaking. There's a lot of truck cases.
Okay, here's a random little – here's a pointless anecdote about a Bollywood movie. I was listening to the commentary track for one of the Sharp movies, the BBC Sharp movies. And it was
Sean Bean stuff?
Yeah, the Sean Bean stuff. So he and Sean Bean was talking with his co-star. They were talking about filming in India. And his co-star said how he caught one of these Bollywood movies. And he said he was talking about this genre change. So I'm like – telling you like an anecdote from an anecdote? But anyway, he was saying he was watching the movie and there was a scene where it was like a brutal rape scene. And then the perpetrator, the next scene, got on a horse and sang a song. I just found that disturbing and hilarious. A lot of 21 Jump Street reissues. That's Mill Creek at it again, I believe, right?
Yep. The entire series.
There's Metropolis with a T-shirt.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Nice.
But don't buy that because there's going to be a re-release pretty soon with more footage. So just don't let the T-shirt tempt you.
Now, Dave, aren't you reviewing The Sweeney?
Yeah, I did. I do have that. I just watched the pilot movie.
I'm curious about that one because I heard a lot of in the commentaries for Life on Mars. They were talking about how it was inspired a lot. At least in the kind of the cop elements.
So I haven't gotten into the actual series. Just watched the pilot movie, which is kind of interesting, though. My wife was impressed. She liked the George Gently mysteries I watched. She said, the first one was a hit. She didn't like the Sweeney too much. So, but we'll see. If it's bodacious 70s action, as that cover suggests, then I think we should be good.
Bodacious being British slang.
Yes.
The guy on the right there has some serious hair.
Oh, yeah.
That's right. I think everything was serious in Britain in the 70s.
I think so. There wasn't much laughter. I didn't detect anything beyond a grimace in the show.
It was the bodacious decade. I think that's what they called it, right?
Yes. All right. Anything else, gentlemen? Actually, there's a lot of random stuff here.
We're still in that summer movie season where the studios don't want to dump a lot of high-profile stuff. They want you to go to the theater instead.
All right. Well, you know what time it is, and to me, there's an obvious one. We'll see if you get it. But
this week is rich.
It is rich. You're probably go 4 or 5 deep. So inadvertently sleazy sounding DVD release of the week. Mark Staley, why don't you go first?
Operation Endgame.
Eric.
Huxley on Huxley.
Mac.
How about Chow Down?
Mike? Rubino?
The Snake?
That's pretty good. No one went with mine. Maybe mine's too out there. But to me, I think it is the greatest euphemism title ever, and that is Max's Chocolate Chicken. I mean, if that's something that Dustin Diamond hasn't done on film, I don't know. I think I would have also taken Jam Down. That would have been okay.
Furry Friends.
Yes.
I don't know. Crack in the World would probably work.
Crack in the World works as well. Yeah, oh, man. Yeah. Lots of stuff. Don't Look Up, I suppose, is a good one. All right. We will move on now to our Ambush Topic segment. We're on a roll of this podcast, this jumbo podcast, so we'll see if we can continue the love going. And this is just we've pulled out random topics, which we'll throw at each other, and I'll kick it off, gentlemen. And this one is a fate worse than death. So a fate suffered by a villain or a good guy or whoever, but they don't die, but it sucks. It's worse than death. So fate worse than death. They cannot have passed away, though.
No one undergoes it, but it's described in great detail in The Princess Bride, the pain.
Oh, yeah. Ah, the pain.
Fight to the pain. Dear God, what is that thing?
That's right.
What is that? Like the slices off the nose and the ears and the...
And eyes, for sure, right? No, ears you keep. Ears you keep.
Oh.
Eyes are gone.
That's right.
Eyes, tongue.
It's been a while.
I'll go with... I think it was the first Austin Powers movie. Will Ferrell's character was Mustafa.
That's right.
And when they hit the button and he fall down under the conference table, he's supposed to be burned alive, and it just never worked, and he just kept getting burned and burned.
That's very good, yes.
I'm going to go with Charlton Heston's crewmates in Planet of the Apes, because they're not killed. They're just lobotomized, and then they're like...
That's right.
And they're just forced to be like monkey slaves.
A lobotomized monkey slave. Which
Yeah. Because it was hot there. I mean, it was real hot. So
you don't see them the rest of the movie. They just kind of go away.
Right, yeah. Well, like once he finds them and he turns them around and then he sees the like horseshoe-shaped scar on their heads.
Yeah.
They they're just gone. Because they probably fell over and don't know how to get up, so they're just like stuck there forever, trampled by horses and things.
Oh, awful.
Yeah.
Mac?
Let's see. There's the famous deleted scene from Alien where Ripley finds a bunch of her crew members and they're like strung up in these alien cocoon things. And the one member's muttering to himself, "Kill me! Kill me!"
That's a lot of alien phlegm in those scenes, if I recall. Well, like most of our ambush topics, they usually get generated when we see something, you know. And then, so we build it off our own. So I was watching a little bit of The Fly 2. You guys ever see The Fly 2?
Sure.
Actually, really shocking in its gore. It is shockingly gory. The Fly 2. I mean, there's scenes where Eric Stoltz turns into the fly and he's systematically hunting down, like, these lab security guards. You know, it's like, what do? They just need a paycheck. But anyway, like, he's spitting his fly phlegm on their face, and one guy, his face just melts off and just tears his whole face off. And it was actually, you know, fairly effective special effecting. But they saved the worst for the head guy. It was like the head corporate CEO or whatever. He was trying to get
talk.
Yeah, there you go. Trying to get the teleportation nailed down. So what happened was our hero Fly realized he needed to teleport with another human being to be freed from his fly predicament. So he grabs this guy, Bartok. They go over. Eric Stoltz emerges from a cocoon, but this guy is like this just deformed genetic sloth mutant freak thing. You know, just keep crawling around. And the last scene of the movie is just a bunch of scientists are looking down in this pit. And he's pushed into this pit, and there's like hay, and he's just crawling around, and he goes to like a little plate of milk, and that's how it ends. So he's just going to be like walking around as this deformed mutant freak. And I remember watching this a long time ago and being disturbed by that, and it's still pretty wacky. So that's a sucky, sucky fate. So, all right. Mac, why don't you go next? What do you got?
Okay. Real simple. Whales.
All right.
I got to go with... Gonna jump in. No. It's okay to jump in, right?
Yes. Don't take. What are you gonna take?
Do it.
I'm gonna take Star Trek IV.
Ah!
With the whale.
Well, you have what is it? 4 or 5 different free willy movies to choose from.
That's true.
Come on, Dave.
Good, because I'm going with a free willy movie.
All right, go ahead.
Because especially I'm going with the first one because for some reason not too long ago I rewatched not that movie. But the jumping over the rock scene.
Oh, good.
And I don't know why. Somebody sent me a YouTube link to it and was like, just look real close. And it's kind of fake. That was really all that.
Wow, really?
That's all that you see.
They didn't put a small boy in the path of a giant whale.
Yeah, like it just looks, you know, the whale, specifically when the whale hits the water, there's like this unnatural splash that comes from like a weird angle or something. So,
that's like the big centerpiece of the whole movie. You think if there's anything not to fake, that'd be.
They should have just did it for reals, but nope.
At least. Go ahead, Mike. What?
No, go ahead.
All right. You don't want to continue the trickery that they employ to get us believing in a whale. You will believe a whale can fly.
I mean, I saw him in Star Trek, right?
That's right. Well, I'm going to go with something that's implied, but it's George Costanza's story about unplugging the blowhole by himself. The sea was angry that day. one of the very great moments in Seinfeld. And speaking of shows that turned a point, that was a very pivotal moment in the series as well. Where they, I remember hearing like they were talking about on the documentary. They're talking about that how they, you know, they can buy this show where Kramer knocks a ball into the ocean and it plugs a whale's blowhole. They can pretty much do anything. So
and then George saves it, no less.
George saves it. Yes, fantastic.
Well, I don't know if you guys were talking on Objection about Flash Gordon and Dino De Laurentiis, who was trying to make a knockoff of Star Wars. Well, he did the same thing with Jaws, if you guys remember, back in 1977. It was called Orca.
I do remember that. I remember it was exceptionally bloody, too, I believe, right?
Yeah, well, I knew Richard Harris and Bo Derek, and it's just like...
Good one. I just remember it being, really gory. They really went all out. You know?
Well, and it disturbed me because we had just been at SeaWorld to see Shamu. So then that movie came out, and like, oh, crap.
Nice. I
remember the poster for that movie. Orca was huge. It was like big as a building. It was like looming over the whole city like Godzilla. And then going to see the movie, and it was just like a regular-sized killer whale and just being ticked off.
All right. Have we completed our whale circle? Are we back to you, Mac?
All right. For mine, I went with Big Blowhole from The Tick.
Is that the one who just runs across the country?
Exactly. Yeah.
Big Blowhole.
Or just from the ocean wearing his little, what do you call it? His little
overalls?
Overalls, thank you. And he just runs across the country like Forrest Gump, except that he's a whale. And, stomping on cars and stuff. And, I have to wonder what was going on in Hollywood. Was there some, writer's room where a bunch of well-paid writers are sitting around? One of them says, yeah, let's do Forrest Gump, but have it be a giant whale instead. And all the other writers said, yeah, let's do that. And that's how we got Big Blowhole. And of course, the Tick, you know, was swallowed by Big Blowhole and had to sacrifice Little Wooden Boy in order to escape.
That's right. I love Little Wooden Boy.
All right. Excellent. Eric, why don't you go ahead?
All right. We know how a lot of movies are kind of based on things like books or even you know, board or video games these days. So I want you to come up with a movie that would be a good adaptation of a song. So let's pick a song that would make a good movie.
Song that make a good movie, huh?
Yeah, song adaptation.
Okay. This is about to get real nerdy.
Oh, good.
I would say The Cygnus X 1 and 2 by Rush. Mm.
Would be a
pretty epic sci-fi movie. It's about an astronaut who flies into a black hole, and that's about as far as I can understand it. But he flies into a black hole and then experiences all these things inside that black hole. But it's
Did
like
you,
a
include the hemispheres portion of that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's right. The hemispheres is like between. That second part, once he's in the black hole, is that it? Then the gods of love and war and these different like Greek gods begin fighting over him. Is that how it plays out?
Yeah, well, I think that he unites the two sides, right? Dionysus and I'm trying to remember the other part of it. Anyway, yeah, it's a good album.
Yeah, yeah.
All right.
So how about that?
Pretty much, and the good thing about any kind of a Rush song as a movie is that it's basically already as long as a movie. So you're already halfway there.
Yeah.
You know, the ship in the movie, the black hole, was called the Cygnus. Is there a coincidence there or intentional? Or?
Well, the ship in Cygnus is called Rocinante, which is Don Quixote's horse.
You know, I think we're doing a little Inception as we speak. So
no spoilers. I don't know what you mean. La, 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 la.
Let's move on. And by the way, Mac, the fact that you know the name of the ship in the black hole means the key kilometer is right. Okay, I'll go with the terrifying horror thriller, The Old Lady Who Swallowed a Fly. I mean, yeah, just read these lyrics, okay? There was an old lady who swallowed a spider that wiggled and wiggled and tickled inside her. Ah, perhaps she'll die. She swallows a goat, actually, and a cow, and a horse.
This would be a Tim Burton movie, then?
Yes, and she's dead, of course. She dies at the end of this, too.
Like an Eli Roth, maybe. Yeah.
Maybe it's a Sam Raimi. It's a follow-up to Drag Me to Hell. It's a new curse. She's forced to consume livestock.
All right, I'll see your old lady and raise you a row, row, row your boat.
Oh, okay.
As done by David Lynch.
All right.
So you have, like, four or five different plot lines, circular stories that are just overlapping each other through the whole thing.
Wow. Nice.
Yeah, that's good.
Ooh, a round movie.
That's good. Clever.
But it would also be kind of like Open Water, right?
Yeah.
Or Lifeboat, I guess.
Yeah, that's a good Lifeboat.
That's the classier choice.
Yeah. All right. Mac, you, right?
Yeah, how about Bat Out of Hell by Meatloaf?
Oh, there you go.
In hell, you say goodbye to your loved one, head off on your fiery, flaming motorcycle, and crash, and then get dragged back into hell at the end. But your heart escapes somehow in some weird metaphor. Maybe there could be a movie in there.
Yeah, why not?
Yeah, you could do a whole romantic comedy out of Paradise by the Dashboard Lights.
Oh, yeah. There you go.
All right, Eric.
All right. You know, I guess my is actually semi-serious, which is not good for the podcast, but it's what inspired me in the first place. But I was listening to Blitzentrapper's new album, Destroyer of the Void, and they've got some songs that are really could make good stories. There's one called The Man Who Would Speak True, who's about a guy who his tongue has been replaced by a growing flower, and it brings death to people. I think that'd be cool.
Yeah.
Right?
Oh yeah.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah, so stuff like that. So anyway, I just wanted to mention that album because it's really good. Destroyer of the Void by Blitzentrapp.
Thank you.
Available on Amazon MP3, I think, and probably
Eric gets kickbacks.
That is, yeah. Friday filibuster music. Very good.
There you go.
Okay, Mike Rubino, what do you got?
All right, one twist too many in a film.
Ah, one twist too many. I'm gonna go with Max's Chocolate Chicken. No, let's see here. One twist, two.
Wasn't it Clue that had like four different endings depending on
which show? Oh, yeah. Different endings, but yeah, the third one had all kinds of crazy twists.
Right.
How about Men in Black 2, where they keep pulling back and the universe is the marbles being played by some CGI aliens?
Right, that was the first one, yeah.
Yeah, first
one. The second one, it was that their entire universe was inside a locker.
Oh, okay. Well, I don't know if it's a twist, but I just thought it was pretty dumb, so.
For too many twists, I'm going to say all of M. Night Shyamalan's movies. That's topical, right, Dave?
It is topical.
That's good.
I mean, right? I'm right there. I'm on top of it. Right?
You are. You're right.
That was it. Okay. I mean, you're talking about Signs, right?
I'm talking about
that's the last one you signed.
That's right. Signs is the most.
It's actually, you laugh, but I think that was actually the last of his movies that I saw. That's what it said.
And it's interesting you bring that up because F this movie, following this podcast, will be all about Signs this week.
That's a movie I loathe pretty aggressively.
Yeah,
we're on my topic, guys.
Sorry,
Microbino. We played by his rules, guys.
I think this topic has one twist too many, I think.
I was just going to say David Mamet's Heist, if you ever saw that with, I don't remember who's in it, but it's a heist movie, obviously. And
is Gene Hackman in that?
Gene Hackman, yeah, that's it. I was going to say Harvey Keitel because they're the same man,
of course,
my opinion.
Yes, that's right.
But yeah,
how does that happen?
I don't know. Them. They're the same dude.
That's obvious.
So
Harvey Keitel is
Jackson's genitalia?
No. I'm just saying they're interchangeable. That's all. But anyway, Gene Hackman is leading this one last heist, and like the end of the movie has like characters coming back that you thought were dead, and then you think they escape, and then like the same character keeps following, like showing up like around the corner of different places. Like it's so yeah, heists. Not a good Mamet movie.
Yeah, I don't know anything about it, but I remember Gene Hackman's face being on it. I like Gene Hackman, but that's all.
Yeah, no, yeah, he's good.
All right. All right, Mark Staley, go ahead.
All right, well, Thursday at Comic-Con, Adult Swim is featuring their new series called Children's Hospital, which I guess is about it's created by David Wayne from The State and Rob Corddry from The Daily Show and Hot Tub Time Machine, so you know it's going to be bizarre. It has to do with the sexual politics of, like, pediatrician doctors.
Oh, great.
Yeah. Yeah. So Adult Swim is loaded with shows that I don't understand, and it bothers me because as I get older, the less I understand about Adult Swim. So let's name the Adult Swim show that just completely perplexes you.
There have been quite a few. What was the one, the mouse one, 16-ounce mouse? Or 18-ounce mouse. It was way too out there. It was like randomness for randomness' sake. It was so random it stopped being funny. Although maybe that was the joke they were pulling on the audience.
That seems to be the trend there.
Yeah.
Just go until the audience gets angry.
Like took it like too far.
Yeah. Well, I'm gonna go with I guess I'll go with it didn't really perplex me. It wasn't like I didn't know what was going on, but I recently reviewed this season Squidbillies, you know, and I guess maybe people like it, but it just perplexes me that just such easy humor, you know. It's just like redneck squids running around, right? Have you guys seen Squidbillies?
Yeah.
So I don't know. It's just, I mean, I guess it just perplexes me that this kind of just, I mean, it's just layup humor. So it's like, hey, you know, they're redneck squids and they're talking about inbreeding and stuff. Gotcha. So I don't know. It just seems like too easy.
Well, you know that show has a really bizarre history behind it, though.
Oh, it does. All right.
It started as the hoax, where they kept promoting the premiere of Squidbillies like for weeks beforehand. It was this huge media blitz. And then when we all turned on to watch the first episode, instead we got Perfect Hair Forever. So it was like, you know, the Adult Swim people were like screwing with us all.
Gotcha. Well, all right. Interesting.
But then they turned around. They actually made a real Squidbillies show, though, so...
I'm going to go with Xavier Renegade Angel.
That's another one.
Which is a show that I've reviewed and I kind of enjoy, but it doesn't make any sense. And anytime I think I've got a grasp on it, it makes less and less sense. But still, It's that show that looks like it's a PlayStation 1 cutscene the whole time. It's really crudely animated 3D. But still the best episode or the best idea I ever got from it was at the beginning of an episode, somebody tells Xavier, eating bacon and smoking eating bacon will take 15 minutes off your life and smoking a cigarette will take 20. So he eats a ton of bacon and smokes a ton of cigarettes and time travels backwards.
All right.
So there you go.
All right. Eric, anything?
It's probably a good show. I've never been able to watch long enough to kind of get a sense, but Tom Goes to the Mayor is kind of has such a weird look to it that I've never been able to really kind of watch it. So I guess that perplexes me. I think I've heard good things about it, but I never watched it. It just looks weird.
All right.
Yeah, that's,
I don't know.
That's the Tim and Eric show. It's those same two guys did.
Is it? Okay. Yeah.
Oh.
All right.
Which, you know, that's good on him, I guess, you know?
Mike, what were you thinking?
Well, I mean, early on, they were doing stuff like Harvey Birdman and Space Ghost Coast to Coast and that kind of stuff I dug. I mean, having grown up as a Hanna-Barbera guy. But now we're getting into things like Frisky Dingo and, what is it, Metal Apocalypse or Metalocalypse?
Yeah.
This stuff, I mean, Venture Brothers kind of perplexes me sometimes where they go a little bit too far. Some of the stuff they've got going on now is just like, okay, I'm too old for this. I don't get it.
You're regular Danny Glover. That's what you are.
Yeah. I actually like Frisky Dingo a lot. I thought it was hilarious. But, yeah, I'm with you on Metalocalypse. It was just his – I get what the joke is, but it's never really worked for me.
And that's the same guy who did Home Movies.
Right, one of them. But, yeah, Brendan Small.
Yeah.
Which Home Movies seems like a downright traditional 80s three-camera sitcom now compared to that, you know?
Yeah.
All right, well, that brings us to the end of the Friday Filibuster proper, and we'll talk a little bit about Inception. So I know Mike and Eric, you guys have not seen it, correct?
Correct.
That is correct.
We do not want to spoil things for you, so I suppose we can bid farewell to you now.
Yeah, well, you guys have fun.
Thank you.
Yep.
Yes, see you guys.
So happy to see ya.
Close the door
on your way.
Close the door.
Your mail's here. Right, I'll put it on the.
Yeah, that'd be awesome. That'd be great. Help yourself to you.
See you guys.
All right. Well, now that we've cleared the room, gentlemen, this podcast is a little robust, so we'll try not to do too super much on Inception, but we might have to get it out here. Really.
I have a part two once other people have seen it.
Too. I think so. So let's just go. Matt, go ahead. A reaction to Inception.
Yeah, I'd say overall I liked it. There were some parts that kind of frustrated me a little, but you know, is it the next Dark Knight? I'm going to say no, but I did enjoy it. They did some really clever stuff, especially in the final third of the movie where things were moving at. You know, we had four different scenes moving at four different speeds.
Yeah.
And the fact that they were able to pull that off without, like, confusing the hell out of everybody and to keep the pacing going was really well done. And so, you know, it's very well done kind of, you know, on that technical level. Story-wise, I'm still kind of not sure. Maybe I need to see it again. The Ellen Page's character kind of – we followed her throughout the whole story, but then she never – We never got any like conclusion for her character. It was all about Leo at the end.
Yeah,
that kind of frustrated me too. So, but with those things aside, you know, this is very well made and well directed. So, I guess kind of a mixed bag for me, but I liked it more than I didn't like it.
All right, Mike.
I was really looking forward to it, and it was actually ended up being better than I expected it to be. In that sense, being it's one of the best movies I think I've seen this year, and. I know that there are like some minor things wrong with it, like some people have been complaining that it's emotionally hollow and things like that. But for me, from the moment that movie started to the end, it was nonstop. Like it never slowed down. It just built continuously, and it built then sometimes on top of itself and on top of itself again and again. And I don't know. I thought it was just a joy to watch. And, of course, like it's had me talking about it, you know, I saw it last night, and I've been talking about it all day and thinking about it and reading about it. And there's so many different, like, theories about the ending and everything, which I don't know if we want to get to.
Yeah, might as well. We're in the rear section.
Yeah, yeah. So, my brother and I had a good conversation about it today, and there's a great article online somewhere that breaks it down from a Carl Jung perspective.
Oh, yeah.
And basically, I sort of am under the agreement that it's the whole thing's a dream.
That's what Dan Mancini believes, too.
I think the entire movie's a dream, and that the interesting theory that I read was that all of those characters in his little Mission Impossible team are actually himself, like extensions of himself, and they all fit Jungian archetypes.
We're getting dangerously close to that crappy John Cusack movie in the hotel room. Remember the
Identity?
Yeah. So.
Oh yeah, yeah. Well, you know, it's not like. That movie is pretty crappy, but this movie I thought was smart enough to pull that off.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I think it was smart. I think, I probably liked it more than you, Max. I really enjoyed it. I'm probably going to see it again this Friday. And a lot of it is I just thought it was thrilling. I was thrilled by it on a visceral level. You know, once the heist kicks off, it's so complex, but it's so well orchestrated. We saw Nolan we talked about this in some injection as well, but we saw Nolan just really can balance these. Like, we saw it in The Prestige, you know, how he kind of tells these stories different times, different levels. I thought he really delivered on this way. I thought his action direction was even better than The Dark Knight. Just how he staged the action, especially the zero-G fight.
Right, that was good.
Yeah. I thought that was definitely, very cool. I just need to rewatch it just to kind of try to pick up some of that conversation he had with Saito. Saito or whatever, when Saito's old, you know, there might be some clues there. I was definitely thinking about it. It was something so complex. I never felt it was pretentious either. And I didn't feel like Nolan was just trying to be cutesy and being a dick. I just felt like he wanted to do something different, tell a story a different way. And yet I thought it still had some great action and some, you know, great stuff there. So I think I'm certainly on the really, really liked it, you know. I'm still thinking about it now. We saw it over the weekend, so and I can't wait to see it again. So just my Nolan man love continues unabated.
Well, he has had a spectacular string of films, and I think part of it for me while watching it was I felt the same way that I felt watching the first Matrix in theaters, you know, way back in the day. Just seeing something that was completely new to me and something that was completely original and seeing something that has these what feels like groundbreaking special effects alongside it. So, like, when all that stuff started exploding around...
Yeah, that was cool.
Leonardo DiCaprio.
That was really cool.
You know, when they walked perpendicularly from one, you know, street to the other, like up the street.
Right.
That, you know, those little things where it wasn't in your face, and you know, the hallway fight scene felt all practical to me. I couldn't
detect any CG, but yeah.
Like, just that combination of stuff was just impressive on, like you said, like a visceral level. Like, hey, I'm seeing something here that's more impressive to me than, you know, the effects in Avatar.
Talking about Matrix real quick, and I know Matrix has its, you know, huge defenders, of course, but I mean, talking about how that series seemed to get weighted down in its philosophy and exposition, you know, and all these layers. So that, you know, so that the Matrix sequels felt pretentious to me, you know, just whereas Inception, which, you know, arguably was dealing with similar kinds of, you know, alternate realities and crazy amounts of exposition, did not. So, and like, Nolan stuff just never feels like that to me. Even Memento, which is this, you know, really cool movie, but it's based on a gimmick essentially, you know, even that, you know, that never kept me at arm's length. So he managed to make this smart, cool stuff that sucks me in. And like The Dark Knight, Inception, he builds a world in Inception that I buy into. And therefore I feel like I have a stake in it when I'm watching it, you know? So, And that's the other thing that appealed to me. So, like, and even as ridiculous as it is, you know, as ridiculous as the premise may be, he establishes that I buy into it, and therefore I'm firmly into it. You know, whereas again, you talked about Avatar, and we talked about this on our Objection podcast as well. You know, I hear about world building, but I never felt it was part of the world of Avatar. You know, whereas something like this, which is even, you know, way out there, I felt into it. So.
And I think part of it is because of the pace and the fact that the movie moved so quickly, and it was more like, here's how this works. Let's next thing. Here's how this works. We're doing it. You know, there's not a lot of exposition. There's not a lot of explanation. You know, like, what kind of drugs are they taking to go to sleep all the time? Like, who's, you know, there's a lot of questions technically that they could have, like, delved into for a long period of time, but instead they just told you things that you needed to know, like the totem and things like that, where they always kept their eye on the prize.
Yeah.
You know, and the plot was always moving forward. It was never moving sideways. And even when they got to the, I don't know, what did you guys think of the third level, if you will, which I thought was pretty amazing.
The snow level. Yeah,
the golden eye.
Golden eye. Yeah. yeah, great. You know, I was trying to figure out, so whose consciousness was that? You know, my wife and I were trying to, you know, where were we? Whose consciousness were we in at that point?
Oh, I believe that was that was Ellen Page's, like, as the architect, she was building those worlds. So
right. That
last one needed to be sort of this desolate maze, like the most complex labyrinth possible.
Yeah.
So it was, I think that was, I viewed it as sort of like something that she custom set up.
Yeah, but don't they take place in, but like, who's the host, right? Isn't it like the host conscious?
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Or are they just build a world and they bring all the subconsciouses in? You know, because they were obviously fearful of Maul showing up, you know, and then when they go, and then Leo, they all, you know, they go to the fourth level there, which was the world he and Maul built up. So I don't know if it was taking place in Leo's subconscious or is this a dream they created, and they all brought their baggage with them.
That's a good question.
So that's the kind of stuff I need to work through next year.
Right.
Yeah,
well, I don't know. All this conversation is kind of getting me curious about the movie again. I'm thinking maybe I need to see it a second time, you know, get into it a little more.
Yeah, I mean, I think, again, I'm usually the contrarian hype, you know, I'm usually, like, against the hype, but I mean, I don't know if this one, I'm not sure if this one was hyped as it, I mean, it certainly wasn't as hyped as, like, Dark Knight or even Avatar, obviously, you know? I think it looked cool, and that generated its own hype, so I think it was just a smart, accessible movie that has certainly got plenty to chew over, directed incredibly well with some... You know, again, going back to the lowbrow action scenes, I guess, but I mean, just stuff that you've never seen before, you know.
Mm-hmm. And it came, and I think it came at a perfect time. If this had been released in January or something, you know, we might not be flipping out over it as much. But the fact that it comes in a summer blockbuster season that is filled with
disappointment,
crap, remakes, sequels, unoriginality, and then this movie just kind of freight trains, if you'll excuse the pun, right into, you know, movie theaters, and is not only is it original, but it's like it's completely original. Like, it feels totally different. You know, in the way it's set up and everything. So I think it's definitely hitting at the right time, and that's certainly fueling, I know that's fueling my excitement about it for sure.
And a shout out to what I think was a great score, Hans Zimmer's score. I thought was really good, even though it doesn't have any like signature tune I can think of. I remember the score really powering so much of that, and really like pushing me along with as complex as the narrative was. That score really helped in just pushing that mood forward. So
right, like I said before, with the different levels moving at different speeds, and yet they kept the pace going. I think the music really helped that.
That's
a lot.
Right. The pace was. Yeah, the pace is going, you know, ultra fast. So, all right, very good. So, Inception. We'll see if we can get Mac to start slobbering over like we are. We'll see. So, but yeah, I think that'll wrap up this edition of the Friday Filibuster. So we said we bid farewell to Eric and Michael, but thanks to Mac and Mike as well. Friday Filibuster, DVDverdict.com is the email address. Facebook.com/FridayFilibuster is our Facebook page. Feel free to check that out. You can scope out the 8-bit Expendables game that Mike was talking about. So, Mac, take us away.
Nobody steps on a church in my town.